The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them, so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals. Whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation, Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino?
Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto.
I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps.
In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic.
Keep your eyes on the road.
Hop on Moto Casino.
Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly.
Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Hi folks, welcome back to our rolling coverage of the nightmare dystopia that is British politics. I'm joined by Dan, and we're going to be talking about a bunch of things that have happened, because actually, though British politics seems to be very turgid at this point, there is motion, and you can see it subtly but incrementally moving in a certain direction.
This series is sort of becoming Edward Gibbon's The Decline and Fall of the Labour Party. We're charting it.
It is, but I'm quite enjoying that.
Oh, yeah, it's good.
Yeah, I'm very much appreciating it. So let's have a look at some by-election, council by-elections. Now, council by-elections, not the most exciting elections that have ever happened.
But they're indicative.
But exactly. They are actually something tangible. It's not just polling. It is something tangible. Power is changing hands, even if it's only a local council. But as you can see here, it looks like the Labour vote in Darlington, Redhall and Lingfield just switched basically to Reform. The Greens. The Greens only up to 9.8% on this one. Labour down 37%. Reform brand new 37.7%.
Oh, that is...
And the Lib Dems as well.
Epic.
So the Labour vote is just splitting in a bunch of directions.
Yeah.
So who's left? Well, probably the NHS workers.
Yes.
Like a local administrator.
Although we did get comments on the last video where there was a number of NHS people were keen to point out that I work for the NHS and I hate Labour too.
So. Hey guys, I'm not saying that
not all of the NHS. Yeah. But yes.
The NHS is something like the seventh largest employer in the world.
Yes. Also the seventh largest, well, the largest religion in Britain.
Correct. Like, and so it's not that every NHS worker loves the Labour Party, but, you know, everyone who votes for the Labour Party is an NHS worker.
Yes.
Anyway, so that's a pretty crushing defeat there, really, for the Labour Party. If I were them, like, right, so we've lost about three quarters of our vote here, have we? That's not good.
Yeah, Conservatives down 22. You've got to imagine most of that went to Reform, although I can imagine some of it would have gone to the Lib Dems, who, whatever reason, didn't contest this one last time around.
No. And as you can see, this is just brutal for the centre.
Yeah,
as we keep mentioning, the complete collapse of the centre. And so you see the radical fringe going into the Greens, the people who don't want anything changed because they have nice big gardens going to the Lib Dems, and of course the angry English going to Reform. Anyway, so we've got other ones. This isn't quite so crushing because Labour, of course, went in charge of this one. But going down from almost 20% down to 4%, Reform absolutely storming it. The Independent didn't run in this one, and... most of it went to Reform.
Oh, this was previously an independent.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But again, it's just another one where it's just like the Labour vote collapsing. Now, Conservatives actually managed to maintain themselves here, but Reform pipped it at the post at the very end. So, you know, nothing terribly exciting on that one. But here you've got the Lib Dems obviously not running a candidate. And where did it go? Well, a lot of it went to the Greens, but a lot of it seems to have gone to Reform as well. And so I think this is...
Oh, that's it. So Lib Dem, when you're not offered the choice to vote Lib Dem, a lot of people do go to Reform.
it looks that way.
Interesting.
Supporting my thesis that actually Lib Dem and Reform voters are basically the same constituency, just at different economic brackets.
That, yes.
And so
that's good evidence.
I'm not going to say this is the most hard and fast evidence ever, but I think that it is indicative.
No, but we made a prediction, and every time we look at results, it looks like our prediction was hangs together.
Yeah, I mean, half of them probably went to the Greens, it looks like, but again, not great. And this is obviously a diehard Conservative area. So interesting, isn't it? There are other ones. This is Fort William and I can't pronounce that, up in Scotland. This has been a Lib Dem stronghold. This has been a Lib Dem area. Like, the north of Scotland is weirdly Liberal Democrat. Especially the Orkney and Shetland Islands of Lib Dem, mostly as an FU.
Lib Dems are weird because they don't operate by the rules of other political parties. What the Lib Dems do is they build a cluster of councillors and so on, and then them and their sort of immediate family and friends go out, and their ground game is the best in British politics.
Yep.
They go out, they pound the streets, they deliver the leaflets. So once you've got a Lib Dem infestation in your area, it's very difficult to eradicate it almost ever.
I'm in a Lib Dem area, unfortunately. Yeah. Good God, it's insufferable. They really are. But what's interesting about this, they took it off the SNP fairly handily there, actually, as well, getting 40% of the vote.
Last few election cycles, I've heard about the SNP a lot.
Yeah,
I've not heard a whisper out of them lately.
Yeah, it's because they're on a slow decline, much slower decline than Labour.
I don't even know who their leader is anymore. It was Alex Salmond, who was a gifted politician.
Nicola Sturgeon.
Yeah, then it was that little cranky woman.
Yeah.
No idea who it even is today, to be honest.
It's an insane woke SJW bald guy.
Oh, right, well, yeah.
I think he's the leader, actually. You know what, I would have to double check that, actually. But the point being on this one, though, Lib Dems do very well in the very north of Scotland for some reason. And I think it's because, essentially, they're positioning themselves as kind of like an anti-SNP. Like, we're not the SNP. The SNP are, like, based around Edinburgh.
You know? Well, this is why the coalition was so destructive for the Lib Dems, because the game the Lib Dems have always played is, in the south, they position themselves as a nicer alternative to the Conservative Party. In the north, they position themselves as a nicer alternative to the Labour Party. And in Scotland, they position themselves as a nicer version to the SNP. Yes. And the reason why the coalition was so destructive to them is because they had to actually pick a side.
Yes.
And then it shattered the illusion. Mm-hmm. And that's why when, I think, Nick Clegg, he won whatever it was, like it might have been 50, 60 seats, something like that, and that got him into the coalition. And then they just kind of crashed after that. And now that memories are fading, they're doing the whole game of...
They're slowly working themselves back up. And at the moment, they're doing quite well. Haven't they got like 70 seats or something?
Yeah, might have done.
It's something like this. It is pretty substantial, but it's definitely a capped constituency. Mm. But anyway, so you can see that the SNP, I think the same, are on a slow decline. Here's West Lothian, where Reform actually gained something. West Lothian, yeah, it's Scotland. Reform actually gained, just a council by-election, but Scotland doesn't like the Reform Party and doesn't like Farage, because Farage is very England-coded.
Well, there was a thing a couple of years ago where Nigel Farage tried to do a tour of Scotland, and it went very badly for him, and he kind of had to bail out and exit it. So the narrative has always been that Reform aren't going to make any progress in Scotland, but evidently, they field a candidate, bang, 32%, win it.
Yeah, and you notice here that the Labour vote and the SNP is on the decline here. Obviously, the Conservatives completely collapsed as well. I imagine the SNP vote... went to the independent candidate, maybe. Who knows? I don't know enough about the constituency to be able to actually tease that out. But the point is, the Labour vote and the SNP and the Conservatives, again, traditional old parties of these areas in the current modern paradigm.
And they have no energy, nobody's interested.
Exactly, no momentum. And like you said, Farage, I just think he's very English, and the Scots don't like him for it.
Well, I mean, they like him enough to elect his people.
Well, that's the point, isn't it? The changing of the wind is, no, actually, Reform can get somewhere in Scotland. I mean, the Reform are doing great in Wales as well, which, again, is one of those things. It's like, oh, he is very English. So it's like, yeah, okay, but you're fucking terrible.
Yeah.
You know, I would rather Nigel Farage swig his pints and smoke his cigarettes than have you in charge.
You know what this reminds me of? It reminds me of California, where even if you're a right-wing individual, you still join the Democrat Party to get elected. And you do get these...
Like Gavin Newsom.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if I'll go to him, but you do get these characters in politics in California who are actually quite right-wing and sensible, but they're members of... Are we seeing that with Britain, where everybody's going to be a Reform member, but a different shade of them?
Is there anyone apart from Tommy Robinson that Reform have actually refused recently?
Yeah, I mean, what was it? So in Portsmouth, they've got a Boris Wave boat migrant. Yeah. Well, I don't know if he's a boat migrant, but they got a Boris Wave migrant standing for a seat in Portsmouth.
A guy literally on indefinite leave to remain that they've promised to revoke.
Yes.
So what are we doing?
And he's good enough for Reform. Yeah. Rupert Lowe isn't.
Bonnie Blue is.
Yeah, they just welcomed Bonnie Blue, a literal whore. She's good enough for Reform.
I don't even know if she's a whore. She doesn't charge.
Fair point.
You know, I think, you know, that's people, there's a lot of misnomers there.
Right.
She's just...
I don't like her, so I...
Massive slag.
And yes.
Like, I don't know what else to describe her. I think she'd describe herself that way. Apex feminist is how she's described herself.
The point is, she's welcoming Reform, and again, Rupert Lowe isn't. Bizarre.
Rupert Lowe, no. Tommy Robinson, no. Bonnie Blue, yes. Boat migrant, yes.
Yes.
Right. Moving on. Here's Leashfield, Armitage and Handsacre. As you can see, the Conservatives did hold it, but Labour lost 2/3 of their vote. And even then, the Conservatives lost a lot of their vote, and this must have literally the Lib Dems, Labour and the Conservatives getting sucked up by Reform.
And you can see, I mean, even in this, even though the Conservatives held it, you can see where the momentum is.
Yeah. If I were the if I were the Conservatives, I'd be like, okay, we are still here, but that's not good. What are we doing wrong? And then you have Darlington. Did I cover that one? No, I covered that one already. Sorry. Did I cover that one? The first one. Yeah, I did cover that one. Yeah, there have been lots of these. And so, so let's get into party membership then, because turns out that Reform are leading the pack now. Now, under Jeremy Corbyn, Labour had 500,000 members.
Whoa.
They something like 550,000, because Jeremy Corbyn put the membership price down to like a fiver or something, and the Corbynistas rushed into the party.
To be fair, I was for those memberships. because when they changed the rules, I signed up under multiple different names, because I knew that when he went, I would get to vote in the leadership election four times, and I think I voted for Diane Abbott.
Well, I would have voted for Diane Abbott too. At this point, honestly, Diane Abbott is way more base than usual. I mean, like, her coming out for jury trials against David Lammy, abolishing them, was like, okay, base Diane Abbott. I mean,
well, I mean, any 80s socialist is well to the right of modern leftists.
Yeah, that's totally true. So it's not exactly clear what the exact numbers of anyone other than Reform is, actually, because Reform's the only one who actually puts it out. And they had a bit of a controversy a while ago, you might remember, where people were claiming, well, this tracker isn't real, and so they allowed some IT guys to validate it and say, no, it's drawing from a database. Like, it's drawing from the actual database. So that's pretty accurate as far as we can tell. Labour, probably less than 250,000 at this point. Greens, something more than 180,000, because Zach Polanski has gone on a massive recruiting drive. And the Conservatives, somewhere less than 123,000.
Well, and if we get a bad flu season, that will go down even more.
Praying that there's not another COVID strike for the Conservative membership. And the Lib Dems are around 83,000, which is fairly normal, hasn't changed that much. So the most remarkable thing here is Labour and the Conservatives. I mean, Conservatives had more than 200,000 only a few years ago. And it can't be just Father Time that has come along with the scythe and done all the work on that either. Labour, like I said, had more than 500,000. They were by far the largest party. But now, as you can see, it's Greens and Reform, and this is all very new. These, remember, Reform have only been cracking for about 4 years now. Nigel Farage has been, a year and a half? Something like that? In Parliament? So he's, like, this is all very, very recent, and the Greens is only the last couple of months with Zach Polanski. They went from something like 20,000 members.
And if you add up Reform and Green, it comes to more than the establishments.
Yes, by far.
And it's growing.
Yes, and they're shrinking. And that's the thing. The momentum, exactly as you say, the change in the wind is against these.
The new.
Yeah, it's the new. And people are tired. And the thing is, Zach Polanski, I don't think he's converting new people. I think he's just gathering the faithful. To be honest with you, I think Farage is doing the same. I don't think he's converting new people to his cause. Because, I mean, Nigel Farage is one of the most famous politicians in Britain. Like, 99.9% of people know who he is, and they either like him or don't like him. But that's still millions of people who do like him that he's gathering together. So, again, all change. And actually, this is pretty astounding, really. And again, if I were in charge of Labour and the Conservatives, I'd be like, right, guys, whatever we're doing, right, we've got to do the opposite.
You would be thinking of a pivot about now, would you?
I would. We'll get to whether they're going to pivot in a minute. Because it is quite remarkable, that stats for lefties have shown here, that the Greens are doing better under Zach Polanski. But again, it's not that much. Considering the amount we get to hear from Zach Polanski, considering the amount that he's on TV, considering the constant upswell from his online activist, to only be at 13% in the polls.
Well, he's been fully endorsed by the BBC.
Yep.
And that's only worth 4.5%. It's not, yeah.
What's interesting is that Zach Polanski is just representing the extremity of the current regime, right? So they all want more immigration. They all want more migrants. They want more money for the NHS. They want more benefits. They want more of what has been promised. And Zach Polanski...
He actually says it.
Exactly. Yeah. He's just saying, no, I'm going to take this to the nth degree, and I'm just going to literally steal money from wealthy people in order to make it happen. The Labour Party and the Conservative Party, of course, are connected to reality, and they're like, okay, but if you do this, you will have problems. You know,
Rachel... I mean, they still do it when they're in power.
Rachel Reeves...
But they speak sensibly.
Exactly. It's not even just that they speak sensibly. I mean, Rachel Reeves' budget's umming and ahhing about where can I squeeze from. It's not that she's not wanting to do the same thing that Zach Polanski's doing. It's she's like, look, I don't want to break the system as I do this. You know, yeah. Of course...
But she's at least aware that there is a reality and it exists.
Actions have consequences.
Zach Polanski is not aware of reality at all.
No, because he's just a London Assembly member. Like, he grills Sadiq Khan. I don't imagine he does. He probably says, Sadiq, why haven't you put net zero into operation? And Sadiq's like, well, I'm doing my best, mate, all right? I'm trying to get there. So he's just pushing at an open door. And the best that they can get is about 13% of the polls. There are other polls where they're higher, but this is on average, of course. Average of polls for August to December, which is all I'm good. So I thought we'd look at like the latest YouGov poll, which is interesting, but not as spectacular as it could be from the perspective of reform. YouGov is a self-selected, broad-scale online polling network. My wife signed up to it. She'll occasionally get polls, but she never gets polls asking her which party she's voting for.
So YouGov is interesting because they basically build a profile on everybody on their service, and then they decide who they're going to send the next poll to. Indeed. And because they've got a profile on you, they can basically predict exactly how you're going to answer the question, which is why their polls are always suspicious, because if they can engineer any result they want to.
They can. But another thing to remember is that YouGov's polling is not actually... it doesn't have a bad history with
no.
it. So it's actually relatively...
You would hope they're doing it genuinely. I'm just simply saying, whenever they want to, they can engineer any result they want.
And there have certainly been examples where they've done this.
COVID,
boat migrants, various other things, you know. But when it comes to like the Westminster voting intention, they're actually more accurate than not. So 28% for reform, don't get me wrong, that's comfortably ahead of Labour, which is down to 18%. That's not the lowest we've seen. The poll, the previous video we covered, is 14%. That was an outlier poll. But that's still, if I hear the Labour Party, terrifying. 18%, though, is atrocious, because you've got the Greens just behind at 17%, which is, of course, above the average. But I think what we're covering is the indicative trend and direction of travel.
So, nevertheless, given that we're looking at a political earthshake and a complete change of power in this country from the old guard to the new... This is not showing me a genuine breakthrough. This is just showing me fracture.
Yes. And this is one of the... I think the... There are a lot of people who are saying, has Nigel Farage peaked early? Because if you go back a couple of months, Farage was about 33, 34% in the polls. And now they're down to like 28, 29, occasionally 30. As you can see, this is plus one from their previous polling. So this is a fairly like level... bent that they've arrived on. And this, like you say, it's actually kind of all to play for at the moment, right? So,
okay. Labour had this phrase because, you know, the Tories really crapped out a bit late in their reign. I mean, you could really tell things were going wrong after the start of Rishi Sunak's reign, when you started to really see those immigration numbers.
I thought during the Theresa May years it was very
short. It dipped then as well. But they had an upswing. I mean, bear in mind, Boris did get a big majority, whatever it was, an 80-seat majority. So they did come back from it, and then he blew it, of course. But Labour had this phrase they used internally, which was carrying a Ming vase across an ice skate rink.
Yeah.
But they only had to carry it for about a year. Whereas Nigel Farage, I mean, from day one, Labour blew it.
Yeah.
So he's carrying this Ming vase across an ice skating rink for 4 years.
Yeah.
And he's got to not drop it.
And what's very strange about reform is the polling is all in, right? People are worried about immigration and then the economy. And then, you know, and that's significantly above other stereotypical political problems.
So he messages as wokeness.
So,
yeah,
boat migrant, indefinite leave to remain guy is our new candidate. Like, it's,
yeah,
I mean, I assume that Farage is keeping his powder dry for close to the election, right? The most optimistic, because I mean, Zia Yusuf has actually been doing quite a good job on Question Time. He's been on a couple of times recently, and he's actually been quite nativist, which, okay, fair enough, you know, good on him. I'm willing to, you know, accept when the good is the good. And Farage himself has been relatively tepid and just kind of coasting on this.
I'm always reluctant to give people credit for being secretly based.
Yeah, me too. But
I've never seen it.
But if you were thinking, right, okay, we are 4 years or nearly 3.5 years, whatever it is, out from an election, I don't want to go hard now because I do know that in 3 years' time, people are still going to be very bothered by the number of foreigners in the country. Mm. The economy's still going to be shit. So you could justify taking a fairly soft tack on almost any issue. And then when you're a couple of months out from the election, pivot hard into anti-immigrant sentiment. Pivot hard into lowering taxes. Pivot hard into state cuts.
Yes.
You know, you could, and that, I think, could push you over the edge. And I think that,
because then you've got to defend your territory for a lot less time.
Exactly.
Don't know whether he's going to do that, but I can see the logic of it.
I mean, that's what I would be doing if I were in his position.
Yeah.
Right. And Nigel's not an idiot. He's not a noob. He's been doing this for a long time. So I'm sure that he has years of experience that he is employing at this. And even then, to be 10 points ahead of the current government.
Yes.
Embarrassing from
me. Yeah, it's not a weak position.
No, it's not a weak position. And I can see why, if you're a reform internal strategist,
yes,
you're looking at this and saying, well, we don't need to panic or do anything.
You're more worried about dropping that Ming vase because you're not getting to the other side of that ice rink any sooner than when Labour decide to call the election.
Exactly.
Or when they force to, which is probably going to be 4 years.
Exactly. And what you'll be able to do as the election approaches, being ahead in the polls, is command the news cycle. Mm. And you would think, okay, well, we'll save the... Because, and we know that Nigel Farage is prepared to go out on a limb on these things. Remember him in front of the winding trail of men coming across and being like, look at this. This is what's coming for Britain. Yeah. He is prepared to go out on a limb on that. And so maybe...
That was in an election cycle, though, backing your theory.
Exactly. That was an election cycle. So maybe he is keeping his powder dry. But anyway, going to the rest of them, Labour and Greens, neck and neck, 18 and 17. With the Conservatives on 17. Like, that's crazy.
Mm.
But the Conservatives, terrible. The fact that the Conservatives are polling the same as the Green Party, if you're a member of the Conservatives, like, you're not winning another election.
No.
They're
done.
There are three other parties ahead of you.
I mean, at the moment, they are the official opposition, and everybody remembers them as being in government most of the time for the last century.
Yeah.
Well, last three centuries, actually. But after this, they're going to be, they're not even going to be in the number three spot. They're going to be up in the back benches, off to the right in that top bit where Reform have to sit now.
Yeah, with about 40, 50 MPs.
But with no momentum.
They'll be in the position of the Lib Dems.
Well, Lib Dems are in the number three spot, aren't they? So they they actually get that front bit of that second bench, and they get to ask a guaranteed question at PMQs. They won't even have that.
That's true. That's true, actually. But it's going to have the same sort of political salience as the Lib Dems. Yeah, okay, yeah. There is a rump of these people, but they're never going to form a government.
They're going to be more like the Ulster Unionists were.
And so, yeah, like the fact that the Lib Dems are on 14% is, again, these four parties are basically all, like, I don't know, competing for runner-up.
The Lib Dems are like the nuclear war cockroach.
Yeah.
You know, doesn't matter what you do to them. They're just always there between 11 and 18% but forever.
The Lib Dem vote is deceptive because it's highly concentrated. Yes. In certain constituencies. Yeah. So the Lib Dems could end up with between something like 70 to 80 seats. Mm. And that could actually put them as the second party in the country, which, I mean, we've talked about in the previous episodes of this, so who knows. But the point is, this is a fractured landscape, and only Reform have any kind of momentum behind them. And the other two parties, the Labour and Conservatives, should really be cacking their pants. Like, this is a miscarriage. Ooh. On their part. To get to this point is just crazy, frankly. And of course, it couldn't get any worse, actually. it just can't get any worse. So 72% of Brits see Starmer unfavourably, giving him a net popularity of minus 54. Rachel Reeves, of course, has also set a record, which is 71% seeing her unfavourably. These are the most unfavourable people in any administration that Britain has had since records began. So
the thing is, he's been breaking this particular record consistently for
months,
about a year now.
Yeah, well, yeah, for literally about a year. So it just couldn't really get any worse. I mean, I'd really like to know who that 28% who are, I'm not sure are. And I can honestly only assume they're being their state employees,
NHS union, few teachers.
Yeah,
probably it. Yeah.
Zia Youssef shared this, and this tells you everything you need to know. Your money's going down, by the way. Rachel Reeves' budget, if you're on sort of, you know, average wages in this country, you're losing about £1,600 a year, was it? Something like that. Well, if you're on social spending, social benefits, well, you're doing great, especially if you keep popping out kids. If you're a public sector worker, that's ahead of inflation, isn't it?
I mean, she was extremely generous to people on welfare. And well, you could see it in the reactions on social media afterwards. The only people crowing about it were the people who were saying, look, I've got six mixed-race kids. Thank you so much, Rachel Reeves. Everybody else was like, I mean, and there was this fantastic scene in Parliament recently where Starmer was basically saying, yeah, I know a load of farmers are going to commit suicide.
Oh, we'll get to that.
We'll
get to that.
Right.
It's just mad.
Yeah.
But so what's inflation at the moment? Because I can't remember off the top of my head.
I've lost track. I'll look it up.
Yeah. But the public sector pay, I reckon that's moving in line with inflation. Of course, private sector pay is only 1.6. So it's like, okay, great. That's absolutely brilliant. We can see who Labour is serving. The unemployed and the state employed. Like, this is an economic suicide pact. That they have decided, no, we are going to tank the economy, tank the country, and you can't do anything about us until 2029.
Yep.
So, brilliant. Thank you, Labour. And I can only assume that you know, that 10% there, that there's the social benefit spending, the public sector pay increases, that is the 28% of people who are benefiting from this.
So it is about 3.6% apparently at the moment.
Right, so the public sector pay is ahead of
inflation. Private sector pay well behind, and benefits are basically doubling up.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Incredible. So you can see who they're serving through their budgets, right? And so the question is, and you raised this on Twitter the other day, are Labour going to pivot? And I thought, oh yeah, good point, because they must realise at this point that everyone hates them, they're not going to make any money, the economy shrank by 0.1% in the last quarter, didn't it? Right. So this is not, weirdly, this is not a recipe for prosperity.
No.
Right. If only we had a school of economics that could get on this and explain why.
Well, I think I pointed out two options. One is that they look at their 90 grand a year job and they think to themselves, because normally the consistent theme in all the politics of all time in every country is getting re-elected.
Yes.
Because it is a prerequisite for power, which these people crave.
Yes.
as well as the 90 grand a year salary that all these people are getting, which I doubt they're going to get when they go back to being a trade union rep or a minor journalist or whatever, or teacher, whatever it is these people did before becoming Labour MPs. Are they going to want to hang on to it? Or are they going to realise it's so utterly hopeless they're going to do every spiteful socialist policy that they've ever wanted to do and they're just going to go for it?
Well, we actually know the answer to option two.
Well, yes, yes.
With the Labour Party. Because, and I've been saying this for a while now, I think this is the last Labour government we're ever going to see.
Mm.
I don't think... I mean, you'd have to have an incredible leader come around after Keir Starmer to cleanse the public
memory. Yeah, I mean, I remember after the 1997 election, people were asking, okay, this is going to be the last Conservative government. But I mean, the Conservatives, they were still there. They still had like 100 MP, I think 134, something like that.
They didn't get thrashed nearly that badly.
No, they were still the official opposition. They were still there and there was still no viable alternative. And what we're looking at...
on that as well, they weren't hated.
No.
In the same way that Labour...
No, they were just unloved.
Yeah. But sorry, carry on.
And, what we're going to say is they still had presence. But what we're looking at here is the Conservative and Labour Party, they're not going to be the official opposition. They might, one of them, if they're lucky, might get the third spot where the Lib Dems sit, where they get to ask one question at PMQs.
Because the Lib Dems have vacated it upwards.
Yes. Yes. They might not even get that. You might have both of these. You might have Labour and the Conservatives.
Under the Greens.
Yeah. Just sat on that back row.
Yeah.
All intermixed. Because they don't have their own seats anymore.
I do love zero seats. I do love it.
So, yeah, coming back from being slightly unloved because a charismatic Tony Blair pops up, but you're still the official opposite, it's a world of difference from just being shunted out of the way entirely.
Yeah, and again, genuine hatred. And it's honestly because the Labour Party, I don't think they understand who they represent anymore. So the Girl Guides banned boys from joining.
So they banned boys from joining, did they?
Yeah, because the Supreme Court... founded in 2009 by Labour, had to come out and be like, well, I mean, actually, boys have winkies and girls have foo-foos. And everyone in Labour was like, age. Well, there we go then.
Yeah.
Settled. And Keir Starmer came out and said, right, okay, I was wrong. Some women do not have penises. It has been officially ruled by...
Easy mistake to make.
officially ruled by the Supreme Court. The word has come down from the managerial
institutions. Because he is such an autonomous robot.
It's mad, isn't it?
Yes. All he can process is rules. Is it in the rules? Is it not in the rules? It's entire worldview.
Exactly. The woke chip was taken out, the plugged in, you know, normal chip was put back in, and Keir Starmer went boop, boop, beep. Okay, yeah, women have vaginas, men have penises.
Mm.
And so a bunch of institutions have had to realign themselves based on this now. And this is an interesting way of determining what is part of the power structures, right? Because there are a bunch of things that have changed, but this is Lisa Nandy talking about the Girl Guide trans ban. And she has said, as you can see, well, the Supreme Court ruling has set a new standard around the definition of what is a woman. Is it a new standard, though? Is it? Yeah. It goes back to the Bible, for Christ's sake, you know, the Garden of Eden.
It's like during the Middle Ages when their version of science was rediscovering what the Romans knew.
Yes, yes. Yeah. So we're going to have to find new ways to include people.
Yes, the rules say no, so we're just going to have to figure out a new rule in order to get around the old rule.
Why is it that we are so committed, Labour, to having boys in the girl guides? Like, it's okay for only to be girls in the Girl Guides, and it's okay for only be boys in the Scouts.
It would be really interesting to sit down with one of these Labour MPs and just ask them. And don't let them prevaricate. Don't let them go sideways with their platitudes. Yeah. Yeah, but why? Yeah.
Why can't you just accept that there are things for boys and things for girls?
Yes.
Anyway, so as you can see, she's not having this. So this isn't exactly a pivot. This is, no, J.K. Rowling is a demon, and we are going to find a way to make sure that women don't have their own spaces, no matter where they are, no matter what age they are. Even if the highest court in the land has said so, we're still going to work on it. It's like, okay, that's mad, right? You're mad. That's not a pivot. And then you had, as you presaged, Starmer and the Farmers. Just insane. This is just insane. So as you can see from No Farmers, No Food, the Labour government has committed £536 million in aid for overseas agriculture projects and of course is going for a $500 million inheritance tax grab against family farmers in the
UK. I did not know that.
Didn't you? We covered it on the podcast a little while ago.
Oh, I must have missed that one.
It just mad. Just mad, mad, mad. And it's just insane. What are you doing?
We're going to have our farmers commit suicide so that we can send money to what? Algerian farmers?
Yeah, yeah, like farmers overseas. Foreign farmers in other countries. Okay. But I just have no idea why they think that this is a good idea. Like, what I mean, I guess the end goal is to make sure we don't do farming in Britain. We do farming, well, we don't do farming. Foreigners do farming elsewhere, make us dependent on them. I mean, what else?
I mean, apart from socialist spite and kill the kulaks.
Yeah.
I wouldn't know where to begin to construct a cogent reason for this.
No, it genuinely is difficult to understand what the pressure that's making him do this is.
I don't know what to say.
And it's so blatant. It's like, yeah, right, we're going to get 500 million out of our farmers. Great, well, we can put 500 million. That can just go straight to...
Yeah.
It's just like, okay. It's like when they said, oh, we need to raise 22 billion. Why? We're going to spend 20 billion in carbon capture. It's like, but you don't have to do this. You don't have to raise our taxes to piss it away elsewhere. And what was it, the OBR came out and like, there isn't a black hole. What are you talking about?
Yes.
It's like, yeah, no, there's not. We just really want to siphon your money away to foreigners and stupid boondoggles.
Yeah.
Like, okay, great. That's just wonderful.
I'm stunned by this. I didn't know.
I know. It's absolutely baffling. And it's just, okay, you absolute traitors, right? This is just genuine treachery. And so this, they're on a Labour Select Committee earlier about this. And they couldn't believe it. They just couldn't believe it. Watch this. It's just genuinely preposterous.
Consequence of the decisions that we've taken. But I can assure you, as you would expect, the president of the NFU has raised this issue with me on more than one occasion.
Not just the president of the NFU.
Well, I appreciate that.
You've heard it from Kat Smith. You've heard it from my select committee. You've heard it from the Welsh Affairs Select Committee. You've heard it from the Northern Ireland Affairs Committee. These are all select committees, incidentally, that have majorities from the Labour Party, and they have all produced unanimous reports calling for this to be paused and rethought. You don't have to listen to me. You don't even have to listen to the farmers out there. You don't have to listen to the president of the NFU. But why do you not listen to your own party colleagues?
I do listen to party colleagues all the time.
And then do what you're going to do anyway.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Mr. Carmichael.
Like, this is just incredible, isn't it?
He's just a robot. He's complete blank.
Utterly implacable. I'm not bothered that all of these committees that Labour chairs and has the majority on, they don't care. I don't care what our own party thinks of this policy. I don't care that people... I mean, another one. This is a longer one, so I'm not going to play this one. But because I can't remember the timestamp offhand. But it's just... They're like, look, some of the farmers are becoming suicidal because you're going to steal their farms through inheritance tax. And Keir Starmer was like, okay, I accept that, but I'm going to carry on with the inheritance tax anyway.
I mean, there was that story that came out a while. He did this interview in which he mentioned that, you know, he doesn't have any favourite films, he doesn't have any favourite books, and he doesn't dream.
Doesn't enjoy poetry.
Yeah, and I heard that and someone thought, who doesn't dream? Everybody dreams. But, I mean, when you see him like this, you can start to accept that, no, he actually is just a complete and utter void of a human being.
Yeah, he's such a man of the system that it doesn't matter. Like, they're all saying to him, they're screaming at him. And notice that the guy was like, yeah, I keep saying to you that this is the case. People keep raising this with you. Your own committees are raising this with you. The farmers are going to kill themselves. And Keir Starmer was like, well, that's fine because we're going to carry on anyway.
Because it's in our rules.
Is it even the rules? Like, what's the pressure coming from this? Like, it's not like if it was about saving money, I'd understand it, but it's not about saving money. It's about sending this money somewhere else.
It's just about sucking it into the state so it can be blown out the other end.
Yeah, to somewhere else. It's about immiserating the country. And so it's, and he's just, like James points out, he's just heartless, utterly like lizard-like regarding this. And so
this is pure banality of evil, this is.
Completely.
An utter banality.
Completely. There's so many lives are going to be ruined by this, let alone the economy, let alone the food supply, let alone all of these other genuine things that we rely on the farmers for. No, it's lives are going to be ruined by this. You know, generations are going to be severed by this. And he just doesn't care.
People have been working the land for 800 years.
If not more.
Unbroken family lines.
Since the Anglo-Saxon settlements.
Ended because some robot turned up.
Because bureaucracy requires it. And you think, right, okay. So what controls Keir Starmer? Because they are as low as they've ever been in the polls. They're as unpopular as they have ever been. And if they continue on this course, it looks like they're going to lose something like 400 seats at the next election. So dead parliament walking. And that will probably be the effective end of the Labour Party. I can't see how they could ever win another election. Or why, like, the alternatives have already sprung up.
Mm.
Why would you not just vote for the Greens if you're some lefty type?
I mean, if you don't know anything about economics and you don't know how money works and you're a progressive, Zach Polanski has charisma. This guy has, he's just a black hole of charisma.
Well, let's talk about charisma, right? So Mike Tapp, as you retweeted the other day, pointed out, look, we must address any links between ethnicity, religion, and culture and child rape. We won't turn away from this. Victims comes first. And you thought, well, does this mark a Labour turning point?
Mm.
Not really, actually.
No. And the reason is, I mean, you listen to this statement and you think, oh, there's hints of based in this. We've had this from the Labour Party a number of times before. Yeah. Remember Keir Starmer's Island of Strangers speech, where basically he copied out Enoch Powell's speech and then just changed some of the headings and read it out again. And again, you thought, ooh, have they learned something?
Yeah.
And then they get pushback and then they just unwind it all.
Yeah,
and they've done this several times. They've tepidly, they've gone into a focus group. And they've listened because they're like, oh, we're going to lose our jobs. Let's go into a focus group and find out. And they write it all down and they come to the, okay, we need to do this thing. It's really clear. We need to do this thing. So they tepidly do it and they get pushback from their backbenchers and then they just tear it all up.
And not just their backbenchers. They get pushback from the people snapping at their heels.
Right.
So as you can see, Zach Polanski, it's been nearly 24 hours and Keir Starmer has not yet condemned the awful comments made by Mike Tapp. Because Zach Polanski just embodies the most radical view of the left that has been puppeteering the Labour and the Conservatives and the Lib Dems for years. And he's just distilled this into its essence. So everything foreign, good, everything domestic, bad, fancy economics, good, actual real world economics, bad. I will sell you like some sort of carnival showman the fiction and you can vote for me and trust me, this will be great. Now, obviously, you know, 4/5 of the electorate are like, no, that's fucking stupid. Ooh. Obviously, I'm not going to do that. But that's not what Zach Polanski's doing. He's basically creating a cul-de-sac for the left in Britain, which is actually great. That's actually good.
I wonder if this is another phenomenon of social media, because for most of my life, and for anyone older, you know, the vast majority of theirs, British politics has been yes, no, and I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, Tory, Labour and Liberal Democrats. Yeah. And there was basically no room for anybody else. Nothing else could emerge. But in the era of social media, if somebody like Zach Polanski pops up and takes over a party that everybody had forgotten about and just has a bit of charisma, a bit of BBC backing, you know, he's an influencer politician is essentially what he is.
That's completely correct. And you're right, he can get somewhere. But I, like I've said before, I think the natural constituency for radical replacementism and insane communism is actually a bit lower than maybe Zach Polanski expects it to be. And I don't think they're ever going to form a majority on the platform that they've got, which is good news. But he is open to a deal with Labour to keep out Nigel Farage as long as Keir Starmer is ousted as the leader.
Yeah.
That's interesting, isn't it? Like, will the Labour Party go like, look, Keir, we are going to get crushed?
I mean, I think what happened is the morning after the election, Keir Starmer will come out and resign. Especially after the drubbing that they're going to get.
I mean, he'll probably lose his seat.
Yeah, well, there is that, yes.
He's probably going to lose his own seat.
You know, he will walk out of Downing Street and, you know, while he's being... Yeah, I mean he's going to have to move his luggage out, presumably.
Yeah.
So he's going to need to go back for the afternoon. But yeah, he will resign immediately. And then what's going to happen? I suppose the Labour Party are going to decide between the six of them which one is going to be leader. And then they can do a deal with Zach Polanski.
But it's likely that they're, I mean,
mind you, why wouldn't Zach Polanski, if Labour get less than 20 seats,
why would he do a deal with them in any
way? Why wouldn't he just say, no, defect to me, join the Green Party, and instantly get an extra 20 seats?
Well, this is the point, isn't it?
Yeah.
As Nigel Farage on the right has been sucking up the Tories, Zach Polanski, I mean, five Green councillors defect, Labour councillors defected today. I forgot to put it in the doc. But five Labour councillors defected to the Greens today. And so you can see that this sucking out of the centre, the vitality and the blood of the centre, is going to leave them, with the Conservatives probably on about 40 seats, Labour on about half a dozen seats.
Especially if it plays out that the Greens get the opposition and the and Lib Dems are the number three party, that nice little front spot on the side, and then the Tories and Labour at the back. Let's say there's 20 Labour MPs back there, or 25, whatever it is. If they defect, they get to go straight back to a proper seat.
Yep,
and that's going to have a big ego effect for them. I can well see them just the whole Labour Party just folding within 2 weeks of the election.
Exactly. Who wants to hang around with the losers?
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, well, we're Labour MPs. It's like, yeah, what does that mean?
Yeah.
You know, that. We're nobodies, and the energy again, like with the Tories, maybe with the Tories, the Tories have got a more sense of sort of loyalty to the Conservative Party as an institution. but even then, they're going to be yesterday's men, and no one's going to care. So if you want to get back into the sort of driving seat of politics, well, you're going to have to essentially defect to Reform or the Greens,
because otherwise you will never be heard from again. If you defect to the Greens, you get to go on Question Time.
Exactly. And so you've got, like I said, the sort of sucking out of the centre, the blood of the centre into the right and the left, finalising the collapse of the centre.
Yeah.
And all you've got, I mean, the fact that it's Zach Polanski basically calling the shots with Labour is very similar to Nigel Farage or Rupert Lowe calling the shots with the Tories. It's like, look, we're prepared to like take you over if you just bend the knee, and because you're following us anyway.
If you watch Prime Minister's questions these days, it's the Labour leader talking to the Conservative leader, and both of them are talking about Nigel Farage.
Yes, and Zach Polanski comes up every now and again.
Yeah, and Zach Polanski.
So exactly. You can see that the centre is following the lead of the extremes, and why would I vote for the second rank version?
Yeah.
If I wanted Zach Polanski, I could just vote for Zach Polanski. I don't have to vote for.
This is like going out and buying an iPhone 3 today.
Yeah.
You just wouldn't do it, would you?
Exactly. I could just buy the authentic thing.
Yeah.
So I just think this is a fascinating continuum of how we are watching the centre just withering, losing its own direction. It can't make an argument for itself. They only make arguments that strengthen Nigel Farage and Zach Polanski. And this is what that Zach Polanski has been complaining about the Labour Party about for the past couple of months. They keep doing things that support Reform. Like, we're going to lower immigration, we're going to stop the boats, we're going to try to like increase prosperity or something like that. Like, all of these things that they are accusing Labour of just bolstering Reform by giving Reform's talking points legitimacy. And it's like, yeah, because they are legitimate, but he is not wrong. That what this means is, well, why would I go to you, who will backtrack on the Island of Strangers or anything like this, or I could go to Farage, who, in my mind, in the media portrayal of Farage, is a raging right-wing racist. And again, the funny thing about that poll earlier is, you know, where was it? Yeah, there we go. No, I had the poll. There we are. Right, this is after they spent the last 2 weeks calling Nigel Farage a Nazi.
Right. Oh, yes, it was.
Back up one, then, I guess. We would have 27 go back up to 28. Why? Because they've been calling Nigel Farage a Nazi.
I mean, essentially, the British public are being asked to choose between one heavy goods vehicle or the other heavy goods vehicle or the Vauxhall Cortina that's got stuck in the middle and has nowhere to go.
Yeah.
They can't go left and they can't go right without getting crushed.
Yes. And so, despite all of this, the centre's dying. It can't make an argument for itself. And the extremes are leading them by the nose. And there doesn't seem to be any way out. It just looks like it's continually...
Well, there's no way out that they're willing to embrace.
No.
Yeah.
So, good times on the horizon.
Interesting times.
Honestly, I'm looking forward to the next election.
Yes.
Like, zero seats for everyone.
Oh, the next election stream is going to be enormous.
It's going to be a banger.
I might break out the green screen again.
We should. We definitely should. It's going to be an absolute banger. Because it's going to be such a bloodbath. Anyway, thanks for joining us, folks. We'll see you in the next one of these. Moro Casino.
America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.